Destination Freedom. Station WMAQ presents Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, Destination Freedom tells the story of the former congressman from Illinois, the Honorable Oscar DePriest, the first Negro since the Reconstruction era to enter the halls of Congress, in a chapter entitled Maiden Speech.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let me tell you what's happened. This is a scene in the Congress, the year 1901. You can't tell what's on a man's mind by the way he walks, but there is important purpose in the footsteps you hear. This man is prepared to make a farewell speech, and though what he says may not alter the minds of those about him, it will give them reason to consider. His name is George White. A name, a speaker, you may not have heard of until this day. But hear now, for he has reached the platform and is about to speak.
Mr. Chairman, as the gentleman said, this is my last day in Congress. I stand before you, the last of a number of Negro legislators sent to Congress since Emancipation Day. Sent here during the days of Reconstruction. Sent here to help keep free men free.
Led by Carpet Bag.
And Scalaway. Order, Congressman.
Since freedmen were in Congress, we have legislated to build schools and hospitals. We made laws to protect the poor and aged and to further the cause of freedom. We were not always right or immune to mistakes. But I'm not here to dwell upon the past. I'm here to bid the Negroes temporary farewell to Congress. The old masters have climbed back into the saddle of the South and have split the union of poor whites and Negro freedmen. And their tool is the Ku Klux Klan.
That's right.
So the enemies of Lincoln will have their day. It shall be a short day, for once a man has touched freedom, he's not likely to forget the feel of it. I am the last representative of free elections in the South. But someday, others will follow my footsteps and make a maiden speech where I make my farewell. Good day, gentlemen.
He turned and walked out of the hall, while it echoed with the footsteps of this man from the Carolinas. It echoed for 28 years, and down to my generation, and to me, Oscar DePriest. I was a boy on an Alabama farm, reading when I should have been plowing.
Oscar!
Yes?
Who in the world were you talking to, boy?
I was reading.
What?
Oh, about old Congressman George White.
Oh, that again.
But the book doesn't tell why he was the last freedman to get into Congress. How did it happen?
Oscar, your father's needing you in the field.
But, Mother, explain
Babe,
to me.
Babe, where's that boy? Where's Oscar?
He's right here, Ted.
And hiding behind a book when he should be in the field.
He's just reading.
Reading? When there's work in the field and we're up to our neck in debt, he's reading. Plowing's the most important thing in the world now. What's there to reading that's so important?
I was reading about a congressman.
Congressman?
Did you ever vote for one, Father? Says everyone should.
Oscar?
Never mind what it says. Never mind. Put the books away. Pick up the plow hand.
I kept behind the plow, but the sound of George White's footsteps echoed in my head all summer and fall as I worked the land. And I asked Father the questions he didn't want to answer. But sometimes he'd say, while we plowed,
been a long time since I voted for anybody or seen anybody in the county do it. Poor white or Negro. There were 3 killed last time. But nobody's tried it since.
It's written that you're supposed to try it. The Constitution says it's the law that every man has the right
and
to...
And who runs the law?
Well, the sheriff.
Well, who runs the sheriff in this county?
I don't know.
Make sure you never have to find out. Yep, you... Yep.
I went on working in the fields and searching for the shortest way to find George White's footsteps. The short way came one day when I noticed a man from town nailing up a poster near the field. What are you putting up there, mister?
Just a little old sign. Don't get excited.
Is it for us? I mean the DePriest family?
No, sir, boy. You'll notice the sign points toward the road, not toward your house. It's for people passing by. Won't do your folks no good. Keep on plowing, boy. Keep on plowing.
I waited until he had stopped nailing and had gone away. Then I went out on the road and read the sign. It spoke plainly.
Primary elections to be held in November. Eligible voters must register at the county office. Register at the county office.
I read it and took the message home to Father. I'm going to see my first election.
You'll see nothing of the kind. The sign was for people who could afford to vote.
I know, but it says that...
What says?
The Constitution says right here that the right to vote shall not
you
be...
You get that school book out of my face?
Ted, leave the boy alone.
When will he get some sense in his head and stop asking foolish, useless questions?
They may not be so useless. Let him alone.
Well, he's not old enough to bother about voting. Least he can believe that.
I was not old enough. But around me in the Alabama fields, I saw men and women who were. I went looking for the man who was nailing up the sign. I wanted to help him.
Yeah? What's that, boy?
I say you got an awful lot of signs to nail up.
Uh-huh.
I'm free in the evenings after plowing time.
Yeah?
I could sort of help you cover the county, if you didn't mind.
Maybe you could, maybe. Tell you what.
Yeah?
I'll pay you a half penny a sign. Here, take a batch of.
Sure. I'll start right over there.
Not there. You be careful where you nail them up.
Careful?
We don't want to arouse the curiosity of those that won't do no good now, do we? Tack them up in the places I tell you. You get what I mean?
I got what he meant. But I took the election notices and went nailing them on the sheds of sharecroppers and tenant farmers. And on the docks, I told the stevedores about it.
What good is it?
Well, see here, boy, what good is telling us about it when the voting's restricted?
That's right.
Well, it's not restricted by law. It's for everybody. I've read it.
And suppose they don't count the votes we put in. Suppose they don't.
Well, if they don't, you can take it to court. I read how you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the schoolboy knows what he's talking about.
Suppose we all march on the poll.
Yeah, the kid's right, I tell you. Let's try.
I went through the docks by day, and I covered the farms at night.
Who is it? You the DePriest kid? What you doing here this time of night?
There's going to be voting in the county next month.
What's that got to do with me?
Well, some of the stevedores are going to try to register. They'd like to have a few farmers with them.
Voting in this county is too dangerous.
That's what the stevedores said.
What's that?
That the farmers would be too scared to come out.
Too scared? You hear that, Ma? Or Ballet?
Listen,
you tell them we'll be there even if they ain't.
And when I had covered the farms, I took my signs and tacked them up in the cotton fields, along the road where the men in the tobacco fields could see them. And one evening, the man who hired me saw me.
Uh-huh. See, you're doing the job right well, boy, right well.
Oh, Mr. Weatherby, I had some left.
No need explaining, boy. I understand.
You do?
Much better than you think I do.
Then you're not... angry.
Oh, no. It ain't up to me to be angry, boy. Not me.
I just thought since there were so many people in the county who'd never voted, I'd sort of show them they could. The Ku Klux Klan's been trying to stop them.
You ever wonder why?
Well,
They're scared the people will vote them out of office. There hasn't been any Negro congressmen from places like Mississippi and Alabama since old George White's days.
Uh-huh. Well, plowboy, you sure keep up with your history.
Well, it's my mother that keeps me reading. She sort of like for me to get into politics.
Was that so? Uh-huh. Well, how'd you like to go to town and meet my boss?
Well...
No better way than to get some advice from an expert. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a letter of introduction. He's been curious to know who's causing them signs to pop up in so many odd places. I just scribbled you out a little note of introduction here. Uh-huh. Put it in this envelope now. You take it to headquarters. Address on the back.
Who shall I give it to?
Ask for Mr. Jenkins, the man with the cigar. He'll be glad to teach you all about politics. Now run along, boy. Run along and get your lesson.
I ran along with the letter in my hands, and I took it up to the building. I opened the door and looked inside the office.
Yeah? You're looking for something, boy?
The man with the cigar had on a white robe.
Somebody send you here, boy?
No, I got the wrong office.
And watch what door you open next time. Might get you into trouble. Close that door now.
I stumbled down the stairs, clutching the letter. I stopped on a side street. Then, almost ashamed of my curiosity, I opened it. It spoke.
Grand Wizard Jenkins, this boy is a dangerous agitator. He has stirred up the stevedores and cotton pickers. See that he gets what's coming to him. See that he gets what's coming to him.
I dropped the letter and turned to go home. I understood now why no one had yet followed the footsteps of old George White. I left the town and hurried home through the night, looking over my shoulders, jumping at imaginary sounds in the dark until there came a sound I knew was real.
What's your hurry, plowboy?
Mr. Weatherby.
Yeah. You walk pretty fast for one who hasn't delivered the message I gave you.
Look, I'm going home.
Not before you get your lesson in politics. Where's all that ambition you had this afternoon?
I saw who that message was.
Yeah, he looked square at me in my Klan clothes. He saw me and beat it.
Now, look, mister, I'm going home. I don't know what you're up to. I don't care.
Enough to send a mob in to register to vote, didn't you? Hold still.
Now, don't.
Watch what you're backing into, boy. You're on the toe.
Come on, give it to him.
Get the rope coming. Get that rope.
White-robed men had circled around me, blocking the rope. I saw a whip come down at me, and I grabbed it.
Let go, you devil, let go.
Yeah, hold it.
I saw another lash coming down, and I jerked away and somehow broke through the circle and dashed down the road. I outspared my would-be teachers and stumbled across the fields until I reached home.
Oscar.
Mother.
Dad.
Look.
Come here. He's hurt. Come here.
What is it? What's happened? Bolt the door. Didn't I say his crazy notions would get him into trouble? Didn't I say it?
What are you talking about?
He's brought trouble down on the house. And just when we had a chance to bring in a good crop.
Oh, what good is the crop when you've got no say-so over who runs the county? He's coming, too. Son? What happened, son?
Men in robes after me for starting the people to vote.
What'd I tell you?
What are you going to do?
Get him out of here is all we can do. Send him north somewhere. Maybe Chicago.
Alone?
And when the morning came, I left the house I was born in and asked my mother, tell me before I go, was I right doing what I did?
There's no time for talking if you're going to catch a train.
Well, tell me, what's the right?
The train will be passing any minute now, Oscar. Go on.
They called me an agitator.
That's not a bad thing to be called when you're looking for the truth. They called him an agitator once. They drove the Lord out of towns, too, for trying to change things. Don't be afraid of it. Only...
Yes?
Some grow cynical as they grow older. I don't want you to change, even if you do become congressman.
Me, don't put such nonsense
even
in the boy's head.
Even so, remember, in order to follow in the footsteps of the men who rose from slavery to become senators in Congress, you've got to keep fighting those who would return everyone to slavery. You've got to keep fighting.
Let the boy forget this foolishness. Let him go.
He can go now, but he'll be back
Not in our lifetime, he won't. Not if he wants to keep alive. Come on, son, get the train. See what you can make of yourself in Chicago.
I left for Chicago with the memory of George White still echoing in my head. I rode the freight across the Mason-Dixon line and worked for years as a decorator by day and studied law at night. One evening when class was over, my instructor, Mr. Lewis, called me to him.
DePriest, you mind staying a while after class?
Not at all.
I wanted to talk to you about your classwork.
Oh, is it that bad?
Oh, no, it's that good. You know, it's strange you're not looking for a law degree.
Well, law is only a hobby with me.
Did you ever think of using it in politics?
Politics?
Yes. There's a new political club in the First Ward. I'd like you to join.
Well, look, friend, I've told you what my political experience has been up to now. I don't want any more.
I know. But it'll be different in Chicago. You've got some ideas I think people will be glad to hear. Besides, voting is not restricted here.
No. There are 200,000 Negro citizens in this city.
Of course.
And there's not a single Negro representative in Congress. It's like Alabama.
That's what I wanted you to say. You tell the boys in the First Ward that, and I think they'll find it very interesting.
I talked to the politicians in the ward, and my instructor brought back their answer.
DePriest, it's the feeling in the ward that there's a need for a new alderman.
Yeah?
Will you run and take a chance on getting the job?
I took a chance. And when the vote counting was over, I, the ex-Alabama plowboy, was alderman. I went about learning the ways of city politics and machines. And when I thought of George White's farewell, I said to my instructor, Mr. Lewis.
Yes?
If I ran for Congress from Chicago, think I could get elected?
Well, you'd be foolish to try.
Well, someone's got to be that foolish. Soon. Tell headquarters that at the next opening, I'm going after the nomination. I waited 10 years for the opening. I waited while there was no spokesman for the biggest minority in America in the halls of Congress. And one day a wire came from my headquarters.
You look as though you've got a summons, Alderman. Bad news?
I don't know yet. It's from headquarters. I've got the nomination to run for Congress.
You're not taking it.
What are my chances?
I steered you into politics. I want to steer you right.
What are my chances?
It's been a good many years since a Negro has gone to Congress. And that was from the South. I'd say your chances were zero.
There's a great need for a congressman who'll speak out for civil rights.
There's a greater need for you to keep your head. Chicago's a tough town, DePriest. There are wards run by racketeers and gunmen. If they don't like your running, you'll never even get to the voters. What's on your mind?
I've been waiting a long time to make that maiden speech. I threw my hat in the ring. And that evening, I had two visitors from the ward.
Hello, Alderman.
Here you're getting ambitious, running for Congress or something.
What can I do for you, gentlemen?
What can he do? You tell him, Bill.
We're telling you what you're not doing, see? You're not running for Congress in this district.
Not unless the chief gets a better idea on how you stand on the liquor business and the wheels.
I think your boss knows where I stand. There's no change.
Look, Alabama boy, you've done well in Chicago, but leave Congress alone. We're asking you to withdraw from the race.
Get out of it and you're safe. Stay in and you're eligible for an alley. You're smart.
I see.
What's in it for you anyway? You play with a boss and you're in clover. In Congress, you're in trouble.
I don't suppose you gentlemen ever heard of George White.
What's this guy talking about?
The big chiefs in the South got Klansmen to disenfranchise a third of the people. I don't intend to let Chicago's Klansmen keep me from following George White into Congress. Tell your chief I'm running. I ran, and the gang chief stood aside and waited as the vote returns came in. And when it was over, There was a new announcement in the ward.
Bulletin from party headquarters. The election in the 1st Congressional District has just been conceded to Oscar DePriest. Oscar DePriest is the new congressman. Total returns...
I was the new congressman. I thought of how it had happened and how close I was to breaking new ground for freedom. But there was still old ground that had to be gone over. The month after my election, a delegation came to my office from a far-off county.
Congressman DePriest, I hope you remember some of us.
Some of you. I remember you all.
We used to work at stevedores in Alabama.
Of course,
we
of course.
Used to listen to a plowboy telling us how to vote.
That's right.
Suddenly I remember you, gentlemen. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you.
We heard you'd been elected, and we thought it'd mean a whole lot more now if you'd come back to Alabama and tell the folks about your plans.
It's been a mighty long time since they heard from one of their own congressmen.
I know, sure. I know.
Of course, it's out of your district.
Oh, no. No, it's not out of my district. Until all peoples have the right to vote and are represented in Congress, my district is your district. Very well. Notify the folk that I'll make Alabama the place for my maiden speech.
We may as well warn you that there's going to be some stiff opposition to your coming.
I'm expecting it. Spread the word around. I'll be down. And the word was spread about my maiden speech. And the opposition came to meet me. It came in a telegram I tore open and heard it say over and over.
Keep out if you want to keep alive, Congressman. Keep out if you want to keep alive. Signed KKK. Signed KKK. Signed KKK.
And my advisor said,
it's foolish to challenge a thing like this, DePriest. Forget it.
I was elected because the people believed I'd risk things like this and more.
But this thing could be serious, not just a prankster's trick. There could be a fight, and politically, you haven't gotten started yet.
Well, if it's a fight for the rights of people, I've no reason to back out. I'll drive down to my hometown. It seems I've got a date with the KKK. I had a date, and I drove down to the Southern Sun. I drove along roads thick with the scent of magnolias and memories of my boyhood. I drove past the cabin my father had built with his own hands and on whose door I had pounded for safety one night when I was afraid. I drove into the night along the Alabama field. I had once plowed until a light fell on my car and men were blocking the road.
Hold him up there.
What are you blocking the road for? Who are you?
Hold on there, Congressman. We're friends.
That's right. We're friends.
You're the stevedore.
Yeah. We invited you down here. We want you to go back.
Go back?
Yeah. The town's been tense since we said you'd speak here. They got Klansmen stalking the road.
We can't be responsible. We're not armed. They've threatened to burn down any building you speak in. You won't find a place to speak.
But there must be someone left who's got the courage to allow me to speak. Let me by. I'll find someone. I drove into town. I searched for the names of halls and churches, and I went inside a phone booth while outside people waited to see what would happen.
Hello, Community Hall speaking.
I understand your hall is vacant for tomorrow night.
That's right.
I'm Congressman DePriest.
Oh, and not for you, mister. I'm sorry, not for you.
I'd like to use your church tonight.
Yes? And for what purpose?
Well, I'm Congressman DePriest.
DePriest, I can't let you speak here. I can't take the chance. I can't. No, sir. Not here, Congressman. Not here. No, sir. You can't speak here.
No, we don't want you to talk here.
I can't allow you to speak
here. We don't want you here, sir.
I can't allow you to speak here.
You say Congressman DePriest?
I've called everyone else. Now I'm coming to see you, Reverend.
Well, my place is small, Congressman, but if you're speaking the way you spoke when you were a plowboy here, my doors are open. Come in.
And I walked through the doors of a small church, and the news had spread, and the streets were full of people waiting to see if I would speak. And when I went inside an anteroom to prepare my speech, my opposition was also waiting.
Well, you shouldn't keep your patrons waiting, Congressman. Come in. Don't let anybody else in, Joe.
What is this? I don't understand you.
You understand a shotgun, don't you?
We told you to keep out of here. Our people warned you.
Who are your people?
Our people are the people who believe that guys like you ought to be blown off the earth. Our people know things are right the way they are. And some folks ought to stay in their places.
Look, plowboy, you go out there and speak and you'll never leave this church alive.
Well, what have you got to say?
What I've got to say, gentlemen, you'll hear in a minute. I'm going to speak to the people who are waiting for me. I turned my back on the men with white sheets and hooded heads and walked into the church. I walked to the pulpit and stood and looked into the field of faces waiting for me to speak. I thought of the men waiting in the anteroom. I thought of the echo of old George White. And I spoke. I came to speak to you tonight as a congressman, as a southerner, and as a friend. I came back to speak because a few years ago, I ran away. And a man who wants freedom can never turn his back on bigots. I can speak as a friend because only those who value equality and justice can be friends. I can speak as a congressman who knows how valuable is this hard-fought-for equality of opportunities among all our people, because my mother and father were born slaves. Therefore, when I say that freedom belongs not to a group of men, nor to a clan, nor to a single party, but to the people, black and white, Jew and Gentile, who have earned it in wars and work, I speak from the heart. I speak as a congressman who knows it has been a long time, too long a time in this land, since a Negro last walked into the halls of Congress. And I speak to you before I go there to tell you that I shall continue to fight to see that the words written into the Bill of Rights become a living reality for all, even if so doing cost me my life. That was all there was to say. There was no applause. And I walked off and down the aisle and toward the door. I walked past the silent people, but I knew they understood. I walked past the anteroom with the hooded men, and there were no shots. I walked out into the cool night around the grounds I was born. I walked out and went to Washington and the halls of Congress. I was confident of the future. I'd already made my maiden speech to the American people.
You've just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of ex-Congressman Oscar DePriest in a chapter entitled Maiden Speech. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Bob Wombold. The role of Oscar DePriest was played by Oscar Brown. That of the father was played by Maurice Copeland, the mother by Weslin Tilden, and Lewis by Ted Liss. Others were Ken Griffin, Charles Mountain, and Forrest Lewis. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Maurice Lachon. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will present the story of William Hastie, governor of the Virgin Islands. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.